now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Okay, let's do it. Come on, we can be out by 5:30. Ben needs to go home too, he's got a young one. We're so family orientated on this show. Come to work to get away from our families. Welcome to Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We're at the end of our week, Jane. How do you think this week has gone? I think this is the week where we've bedded in.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's been a moderate success?
No.
I wouldn't go that far either. No, yeah. Okay.
That's still off in the distance. Mm. But I feel a little bit more confident now when I take the lift in the morning.
Yeah.
I actually know that you can come out of the ladies' toilets and turn left and you're in the canteen. You don't have to walk back to the office and then turn right and walk all the way round, which I've been doing for 6 weeks.
Well, it's handy because the number of daily steps that I've been doing has been through the roof because I also used to get lost navigating my way.
That's a bad thing for you that you can find your way around.
Yeah. It really is a bad thing. I should be so unfit now, as opposed to the athletic figure I'm currently cutting. Of course, Christmas does mean mince pies, and we've just had a tasting test with Times food editor Tony Turnbull. And Tony, he's a plucky customer because he turns up every week for the final segment of our live radio show.
Where we are a combination of a little bit acidic and a little bit acerbic, aren't we? We've gone a bit giddy.
And quite giddy, yeah. Yeah, and he's very patient and he writes these very important and interesting articles about food and food trends for the Times. And today he had to just do battle with me saying, well, how expensive are these award-winning Asda mince pies? A fact that he happened not to have at his fingertips. But
that's the kind of thing that angers a very, very veteran broadcaster like yourself.
Well, I like facts. Also, the item was about mince pies, and this is public information. I'm going back to my old days. But if you do want to seek out a really good value supermarket mince pie, Asda are doing the best ones this year, according to the Times taste testers. And if you're going a little bit more upmarket and you're prepared to spend a little bit more, then Betty's of Harrogate are doing the upmarket best mince pies. Mm. So good.
Well, I'm glad we've got that sorted.
It's important because yes. I know you're not keen on
No, I don't
something.
Like a mince pie oh, I at like all. Them. I don't like a mince pie. I think they get such an easy ride. They're a disgusting pastry. But because they're part of tradition, everybody just lowers their bar to a ridiculous extent. You know, to the level at which basically a great big plonk of off jam is put inside pastry and baked and everyone goes, it's a mince pie. I just don't really like them.
Okay, that really did feel quite a passionate attack.
I didn't know I had it in.
No, nor did I, on the mince pie, which is just a little pie that is traditionally associated.
Don't come near me with your mince pies.
God, I thought I was the stroppy one. Okay, now we had a great guest on our live show today, which I appreciate lots of people can't hear because they're busy with their lives. But if you are available, we do.
That's terrible because then people who do listen during the week are just left thinking, oh, Jane's just said I'm not busy, I have no life.
but we're so short of things to do that we're able to come in and do the programme. So that's, you know, that's the whole point.
That's
isn't it?
The bonus.
So, but maybe you're just listening to the podcast and you're not aware that we are doing a live show and it's on Times Radio, Monday to Thursday, 3 o'clock till 5. We're squidged. And it's a beautiful place to be between Mariella Frostrup and John Pienaar. Who wouldn't want that as a place to work?
Well, I mean, we're delighted that we are in that crevice. And Tom Allen was our big guest today. Now, we've talked to Tom before because he had a little book out during lockdown, didn't he?
Yes, that was called No Shame.
Which we thoroughly enjoyed. So he had high hopes for book number two, which is called...
Too Much.
And he didn't disappoint. It's a collection of anecdotes about his life, but the bonding theme is the influence that his dad had over his life. And very sadly, his dad died really suddenly in 2021. So it's a book that commemorates his life and his wisdom, but obviously told through funny stories. And Tom tells a funny story well, doesn't he?
He does, he does. And he's also, it is worth acknowledging what a well-turned-out person he is. Just superb, sharp suits that really fit him, always accessorised with a beautiful silk handkerchief and a great tie.
I bet he's got some lackey pants somewhere at home.
No, I don't think he has, actually. I genuinely don't think he has. And we've had a very high standard of male guests this week, sartorially, because Paul Feig yesterday was also incredibly well turned out.
That's very true. Has it changed how you look at yourself in the mirror? I'm thinking not. Right, here's Tom.
Hello. Wow, what a great roundup you did there. Better than I could have done myself.
Well, look, would you start by telling us a bit about your dad? Because he does sound so fabulous. And you put ahead of every chapter a little thing that he said or did that has really meant something to you. And he just comes across as such a wise, lovely bloke.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. Well, I am cursed with this posh voice, of course. But it's not from anywhere. My parents are... really kind of working class Londoners, I suppose. And my dad was from Penge, although he would say, I'm not from Penge, I'm from Annerley, which he thought sounded better, but it didn't. And my mum grew up in Sydenham, and my dad was a coach driver. But sort of since losing him, I've realised that he did have moments of great wisdom. So my publisher suggested actually framing each chapter with something he'd said. And then I realised, well, my dad wasn't like Giles Brandreth, didn't have like witty epithets for everything, but he would have odd phrases like it's cold enough for a handbag, which doesn't actually mean anything, I've since realised. It just meant it was very cold. I assumed it was something Cockney, but no one's ever said it before in Cockneyfordshire or elsewhere. So he said some eccentric things. I won't repeat any of the obscene ones he said, but he did also he would have nice ones like you can never have too much love, which I thought was a nice... I realised it's a very profound thing to say. Because it's not like gas and oil. It doesn't run out. And also, always go into things with a good heart. Because I think it's very easy to go into things kind of kicking and screaming. He said it to me about maths. I said, I don't like maths. He said, go into it with a good heart because you're going to have to do it. So you can go into it hating it or you can go into it like, you know, trying to like it. And I did, and I quite liked it in the end.
I like the bit in the book where you talk about an attempt by you, very good-hearted attempt to do the right thing for your parents and take them somewhere you thought they'd like because you could, because you'd done very well for yourself. And actually, you go to a hotel. Is it in Cornwall?
It's a hotel in Cornwall. And I thought they'll love this. It was very chic and modern and, you know, very cool. And I thought, oh, I'll treat them to this because I'm on tour and I could afford it. And I wanted to treat them, but they absolutely hated it. And, well, my dad especially, they didn't have a reception area. So it just had a man with a clipboard and some eyebrows coming out when my dad arrived. And my dad, and he was like, can I help you at all, sir? And my dad went, yeah, I just want to check in. And he was like, well, we don't really have a reception here. We just, you know, how are you feeling? Would you like a juice? And my dad was like, no, I wouldn't. I just want to get my room keys. And then later that, I got an amazing room overlooking the ocean, went into their room later in the day and they pulled the curtain. And I said, why have you done that? And, well, it's too bright. And then my mum went, oh, it's too warm in here for your dad. And I said, why don't you open the window? And my dad went, oh, the sea is too loud. It's like a motorway. And I realised as well that I thought this would be a wonderful treat. And, of course, actually, it was just me trying to impose my silly, you know, urban, you know, cool, trendy ways.
Well, you had become horrifically sophisticated, if I can put it that way.
That is very kind of you to say. It means a lot.
Do you find it quite difficult in these interviews to be constantly asked about your dad? Because actually that's a very recent loss.
Well, I suppose I didn't really consider it because I just thought, like with stand-up, which I do is my mainstay, I try and talk about things that matter and that connect with people because they are important to me. And people, other people go, oh, I relate to that as well. And so I just felt, well, with this, I should maybe try and put it on paper and just be honest. Because I think it's very easy to sort of assume that it's all going to be like, particularly with grief, that it would be like a film or a book. A lot of time people have quite glib things they say to you. And I just thought, well, if I write about it honestly, then maybe it'll help other people. So I suppose it is a little bit tricky, but to be honest, it's been nice to talk about Dad and you know, have space to do that.
Mm, good.
Hopefully not in a downer way. Nobody, I'm not a Debbie Downer over here talking about dead relatives. But
no, you're an Ursula uplifter.
Oh, that's very good.
She'd prepared that.
No, that's beautiful, actually. That's beautiful. Jane, I feel like I've been very flattered. Here.
Jane said something very true, actually, about the book before you came on air, that you're very capable and confident as a writer to share, but not to overshare. Oh. And that's quite a tricky thing. Thing, isn't it? Because I think there is some oversharing at the moment.
Oh, what, in life generally?
I think so. Yeah. And in some memoirs.
And in some memoirs, really? Well, I thought, well, of course, one wants to make it accessible to the people reading it. And of course, I did want to make it humorous because that's always been my default setting. And even in grief, you do laugh. You do find funny things. And like, you know, so I just tried to kind of stick to those rules, really.
But has anyone pulled you back sometimes in your writing and said, actually, you know, maybe you don't want to...
Nobody wants to hear this. No, actually, nobody said that to me. I thought they might, but nobody did. And I did try and be just as honest and as vulnerable as I could be. David Sedaris, I think, has the saying of just think about what you're really ashamed of. Think about what really makes you cringe with embarrassment and then write about that. And so I tried to learn from that, really, because I think that is true. Because with a book, people take you on holiday with them and they take you to bed with them. And so you owe it to them to be truthful. So I tried to do that as much as possible.
Which is a lovely way to enter the part of the conversation where I wanted to tackle American toilets and feel so
yes.
They're not the same as ours, are
they? They're not the same, are they?
No.
Well, the thing is, I didn't realise until
it's
I read
doors.
Your book.
It's the door. Why there's barely a door there.
But I think the male stalls are very different to female
stalls.
Well,
that must be it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so it was a whole new world that you took me into.
Well, it was very high. They start very high off the ground and they finish quite low down. So there's barely a sort of strip across the middle and there's gaps around the outside of the doors. These are in public toilets, of course. But then sometimes they have like Louvre doors on them as well. You know, those sort of slatted doors on them. And I found that very alarming. And I can only understand why they're so polarised at the moment, if that's their stress that's underpinning their society.
Yeah, I mean, you have shy bladder syndrome.
I do. Do you? No. That's a personal question. But I do... No, sorry, I thought we were going to go into a phone-in.
It's like being back on Woman's Hour. Carry
it's
on.
Just... Isn't it just like being back on Woman's Hour?
By the way, it's a very... It's not a laughing matter if you do have a shy bladder.
Well, I do as well. I've gone for whole journeys.
Yes,
so... I never used to be able to go on a train.
Right, and how does...
I used to go to Edinburgh on the train. Oh. I thought it was better for the environment.
Tom, please. You couldn't possibly have gone on the train all the way to Edinburgh and not gone to the loo.
I went to Australia as a teenager without going to the loo. Yeah, I mean,
you
it's
must
not good
have been in agony.
Well, you know, pain is sometimes a source of great inspiration to me.
That's a different phone in.
That's a different.
It really is.
A different station.
I think it's your next book as well, Tom.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Would you mind talking us through, not the entire chapter where you visit a gay sauna for the first time, but some of the tension around that? Because I think you were 22.
Yes.
And Fi and I were saying earlier, this is a world that obviously no straight woman is ever going to navigate. And it just, it seems such an intimidating place to enter.
Well, it was, and I certainly found it so. And I was sort of led to believe that that was where every gay person went. And so I was kind of curious about these places. And I think as a queer young person, you often do end up going on these journeys on your own because you might not have people around you who you can immediately identify with. So you sort of go out on your own. And I remember going to this place, which was next to a wine shop, as I remember, a majestic wine shop in the East End. I had to sort of go across this car park because gays have to pay and display. And that could be the name. Anyway, went in and was quite intimidated. But then there was, you know, there were bits of it where it's quite sociable, where there's like a tuck shop and there were people sat around watching Emmerdale Farm.
It was the fact that it was Club Biscuits. And was there really Emmerdale Farm on the screen?
On the screens they had, yeah. Yeah, and then Club Biscuits and Kit Kats as well.
Okay,
all manner of confectionery, and there was all these different areas which were quite intriguing. I mean, I was sort of more intrigued by the interior decor. One bit was sort of themed around ancient Greece. Another bit was sort of themed around. Well, it sort of had carpet on a stairwell with a plaque, looked like a photocopy shop. But it had all these different zones, like the Crystal Maze. So it was very intriguing, and I was sort of more drawn to that, actually, and didn't really go in there for the purpose that it was set out for, and just actually had quite an intriguing time walking around.
Well, walking around until you fell over.
Well, I did slip over, yes. In a sort of what was, I suppose, my first attempt at slapstick comedy. And did make the person who was staring at me at the time laugh and sort of broke down barriers. And that's a good thing, isn't it?
And what was really touching was that your dad, I think, picked you up from the station.
Yes, well, you did, yes. So nothing happened there, really. And I got a bit tired of walking around in a towel. And I haven't really got the chest for walking around in a towel. And I was trying to look more pronounced, but I just ended up sticking out my nipples. And then I went home, and as I was on the train, Dad said, "Are you all right? Do you want to lift?" And I said, "Yes." And that, so it was the least kind of extreme experience I could have had in that context. And my dad always was very much on hand with a lift. And he said, "Did you have a nice evening?" And I just went, "Yes," and didn't tell him anymore.
Right. Could you have told him anymore?
No.
No.
Okay. Would anybody? No. No, I mean, I think I probably could have done. But what I found in writing the book is a lot of our connection, a lot of our relationship was actually about things we didn't say. Like my dad would show he cared by making me a bacon sandwich. When he would give a bacon sandwich to anybody who came to the house, vegans, anybody really. So it's sort of the complexities of affection, I think, are one of the things I've realised.
Tom, have you ever been to Japan?
I have been to Japan. I don't like to mention it, but I have been to Japan. But people go to Japan solely for the purpose of telling other people that they've been to Japan, I think. And let me tell you, it is a wonderful place, very polite. There were signs that said things like, I went to a temple, there was a sign across it saying, "Please don't come in." And I thought that was a lovely thing, and I would like that perhaps on my house. And also, once we... It's very polite, of course, in Japan. Everyone takes their shoes off all the time. People do a lot of bowing. A so-called friend and I went to find a theater in Kyoto, a very beautiful old city, wandering around, could not find this theater, eventually found this very uplit building, very beautiful, thought this must be it, walked in, went through the screens, walking through all the different rooms, couldn't find anybody to ask what was going on or what to do, all these empty rooms, just walking around, and then this woman came out eventually in a very immaculate traditional Japanese outfit and makeup and hair, and she looked at us up and down, quite alarmed, and then she went, "This is my house." And it was awful because we were there with our shoes on and we had to do a lot of bowing to get out of that.
What I love about that is that you went, no idea why you went, in August, July and August of 2012, when everything was happening here.
Well, everybody said...
The Olympics.
Do you remember that everybody was saying, "Oh, the Olympics is going to be awful. You can't go to London." Everyone was so down on it. Everyone was going, "Oh, it's going to be awful. You can't get the tube and they're telling us to stay at home." I mean, can you imagine such a thing, being told to stay at home? "Oh, I never wanted the Olympics. It's costed so much money." And then as soon as it started, everybody went, "Oh, isn't the Olympics great?" And
we were watching every day.
"Aren't we great?" I know, and I thought, well, hang on a second. For the last, whatever it was, years, 7 years, you've all been moaning about it. So I thought, well, I'm going to get out of here if you're all going to be moaning all the time. Went to Japan when it was actually quite cheap to fly there, obviously because no one was flying that way round, everybody's flying into London, no one's flying out, and it's absolutely boiling, like 100% humidity, which I thought was, what does that mean? It sounds like a river.
Yeah.
It was very, very warm.
I think you're a deliciously contradictory person, Tom, because on the one hand, in your writing, you've got a kind of vulnerability and... you're capable of admitting that you were shy, you know, that you had difficulties in your life and all that kind of stuff. You kind of make out that you would be very happy just being at home a lot. But then you take off to Kyoto, you take off to Japan. Yeah.
Going to East Grinstead.
Tonight I'm in East Grinstead.
You did stand up in New York. You know, you do push yourself as well. So how do those two things kind of...
Well, I don't know. I think I just quite like the idea of challenging myself. And
no,
I think,
but you see, you go through with it. Lots of people like the idea, but they never get further than East Grinstead.
I almost do it as a dare to myself. I think it's so kind of... Doing stand-up was sort of so ridiculous that I should have ever attempted it. But then I quite liked the audacity of it and then kind of kept going. But more and more as I've got older, I do quite like just sitting indoors quietly. And I think the world would be a better place if everyone just sat down and shut up. That was another one of the things my dad said, actually. If you can't improve on the silence, keep your mouth shut.
Well, it's not a piece of advice Fee and I want to hear.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I wasn't saying it to you or to anybody or anybody in the radio industry.
Having said that, you have always, according to the book anyway, had an affinity with middle-aged women. Dinner ladies were a big favourite. You were the lad who would gather by the dinner lady who was watching over the playground.
Yes, she was my main friend. And around about that time, when I was at primary school, I did develop a sort of identified with Hyacinthe Bouquet quite strongly. I did feel like very much I was a middle-aged, middle-class, suburban housewife. Not a housewife, she wouldn't describe herself as
matriarchal
that.
Matriarchal figure. Yeah.
And even though I was sort of 9 years old, which is quite a lot to explain to a dinner lady in Bromley, and yet I still felt very strongly that I must be in some way connected to Hyacinthe Bouquet. And latterly sort of became more identified with Patricia Routledge herself. I felt very frustrated, like, why was I being made to do PE? Patricia Routledge wouldn't have to do PE. Why was I having to do a spelling test? Patricia Routledge wouldn't have to do a spelling test.
Well, she probably did in her time.
Yes, probably. Probably, I realise that now. But I was unusual. I didn't have many children. I didn't have many friends because I told the other children that I was an emperor. So it's... I was odd, definitely, but I sort of think I owe it to people to say, well, I'm odd sometimes, and then other people go, well, actually, I'm a bit odd as well. Hmm. And then we all feel a bit less alone.
Well, your empressness, what would we say? How would you address an emperor?
Imperial Majesty.
Your Imperial Majesty. You. It's been really lovely to have you in our studio
today.
It's been
lovely to be
Thank
here.
Thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Pleasure
Tom's
as
book
always.
Is called Too Much. It's been described as hilarious and poignant by Joe Brand. Well, that's a very nice quote. We can't really beat that, can we?
No, we can't. And we wish you luck in East Grinstead. Have you played East Grinstead before?
I think I have. But it's a place with Tudor beams, and that doesn't really narrow it down. But I'm looking forward to going to some sort of cafe this afternoon when I get there.
That was the comedian Tom Allen, whose book Too Much is available now.
Yeah, he didn't say the word lubricant on the live show, but that is what he slipped in at that sauna. I think listeners to this podcast are adult enough to hear the word.
You're naughty. You were not going to leave work today without having got lubricant into some kind of a broadcast element, because you had an editorial meeting about it this morning.
I know. I just asked, could I say lubricant? You see, I've been in lots of meetings like that over the years. Perhaps they're not your normal.
Well, no, I'm Broadcasting House. We didn't tend to have them.
Well, trust me, we did. All right.
Yep. Anyway, it's a funny book, and we really liked talking to him.
And we were grateful to Tom for making time in his day to come and see us, because he was on his way to a gig in East Grinstead.
I hope that went well for him. Gretchen has sent us a really, really thoughtful email, so here we go. This is my first time writing into any show. Can you keep me anonymous, or could you call me Gretchen? I just have. We're all right. I've been a listener almost from the very start of your pod careers, and I wanted to thank you because your podcast has helped me through the difficult time when my partner and I realised that my then 6-year-old daughter had autism. She went through a big mental health breakdown in a very damp seaside cottage on a summer holiday in Wales. And needless to say, it was very traumatic because we were still so clueless about everything. Because we didn't have a phone signal in that cottage, I
found myself driving up the hill to a huge car park in the vicinity and calling the helpline of the National Autism Society, asking all the questions I could think of. And it was in that car park that I started listening to your show, and it's kept me halfway sane since then. The good news is we are now slowly getting out of crisis mode, and many good things have come out of this journey. I've been one of the many women who have recently had a late diagnosis of ADHD, and it was indeed life-changing. Thank you for touching on that topic a few times in your chats as well. Warmest regards and all the best for your new show. I'm delighted I'll be able to listen to you whilst cooking dinner in the evenings. Well, Gretchen, it's lovely to have you on board. And I think, you know, to be serious for a moment, one of the things that we would really like to do with this podcast, and it is what happened with the last podcast, is create the kind of place where you can write in about stuff that is going on in your daily life that you might not think is relevant to other podcasts, other broadcasts. And quite often, it's about the people you're caring for, it's about the tough times you're going through, and it's about the things that might make you laugh or keep you going along the way. And you might think they're trivial, but they're not.
No.
They're really not.
No, I agree. And Gretchen, thank you for letting us, I don't know, letting us into your life. You've been kind enough to listen to us and engage with what we're prattling on about, so we really appreciate it. And I think you paint a very, very vivid picture of driving up to that car park, perched somewhere high on a hill where you could get a signal because you were just a bit desperate, frankly, and calling that helpline. So I really hope you're getting, you and your daughter and your partner are getting all the support you need. Not an easy time, and I hope you're able to get through it. And if we can help in any way, however trivial, then that's good enough for us. George says, I found your previous podcast. I'm not sure how, but I was glad I did. Well, George, we don't know how we found it either, so I certainly can't expect anyone else to know how they found it. A little bit about myself. I'm a 39-year-old gay married man, well, actually non-binary, and I live in Indiana in the USA. Not your target audience, I'm sure, but you've always reminded me of listening to the adults at the adults' table. How many times do we have to say, Fee, we have no target audience. We'll be listened to by anybody. Yeah. We just don't care.
Welcome aboard, George.
On an old episode of the previous podcast, you discussed grief, and it just happened to be on when I was driving to my brother-in-law's. It was the first get-together after his wife, my sister, had died from COVID at the age of 35. This was just before the vaccine was available to our age group here in America, and you really helped in a time that was so hard for me. Anyway, I felt it important to share, so relieved I now have another avenue to listen to you both. Lots of love from George, and our love back to you as well, George. And how awful that your sister died at such a young age from COVID. That is very, very tough.
I think we've forgotten, haven't we, also how we felt before the vaccine. And it must be so, so painful for somebody to have died before the vaccination became available. And I remember a friend in America telling me she'd had the vaccination months before it was available here. She was part of a family that had someone visiting a ICU unit all the time. And I just remember thinking, I'd like to come over there now. You know, I'd like to be part of that protected group. So I'm so sorry, George, to hear that about your sister. But like Jane says, it's lovely to know that you're with us now. Thank you for all of your emails, and we really do love hearing from you. You can take the topics outside of what we're talking about already in the podcast or on the live show. Anything you like, really. janeandfee@times.radio is the email address.
Well, thank you very much for that, Fee. I hope you have a lovely weekend. Unfortunately for us both, we have to see each other tomorrow, but we do have 2 days free of each other to experiment with other human beings, which we're both looking forward to. And we'll be back on Monday with some good guests, actually. The stars of My Dad Wrote a Porno are going to be talking to us.
They are, and their podcast is ending, Jane. What will we have in common with them?
My dad hasn't written a porno, as far as I know. You have been listening to Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Our Times Radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Ben Mitchell.
Now, you can listen to us on the free Times Radio app, or you can download every episode from wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget that if you liked what you heard and thought, hey, I want to listen to this, but live, then you can, Monday to Thursday, 3 till 5 on Times Radio.
Yeah. Embrace the live radio jeopardy. Thank you for listening, and hope you can join us off air very soon. Goodbye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.